Wake up, America. It's Morning Air with John Morales.
Si, senor.
Sarah Tafoya.
This is my mom.
Am I going to get paid for this?
And Glenn Leverins.
This is Morning Air.
That's how I know.
On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Pay that kid already, Sarah. My goodness. Say good morning. Welcome to Morning Air. It's Glenn and Sarah in for John today. Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. St. Paddy's Day coming up tomorrow. Some dispensations this year with St. Paddy's Day on a Friday in terms of the ability to eat meat and maybe do something different instead for penance on Friday. We'll talk about that. Father James Kubicki coming up before the hour is through, talking marriage and marriage prep a little bit this half hour. Sarah, you know, I think since we're here, we're on the radio, we have this duty to share good things with the audience, and maybe we have some good marriage tips how to make things go better, or, you know, efforts we tried and they didn't work so well. But, you know, if you were to be involved in marriage prep, what are some of the tips you might share?
Okay, first off, Glenn, I am not paying her for that. That's ridiculous. You hear me laughing that off. There's no way she's getting paid for one line. She does not have enough. That's no way. No way. Okay. But going back to marriage tips. Yeah, it's our duty to just speak our mind here. We're getting paid to talk to everyone out there in radio land. So why not? Let's give our marriage tips. I mean, number one, you got to stay friends, you know, especially, I mean, whether you have kids or not, but when you have kids, you have to stay friendly. You have to be able to laugh about the ridiculous things that are happening in your house. And remember, you're on the same team, right? It's you against the crazy little kids, and you will survive. You will be the winner. You'll be victorious. But, those are the big things. I know that me and my husband are constantly looking at each other and being like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe this is not what we thought parenthood was going to be like. But it's an interesting and fun journey.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And without a doubt, challenging when the kids are little. And then there comes the day when they're not little anymore. But you need to still be friends with your spouse, whether the kids are little, whether there are no kids, whether the kids are grown and gone. Being friends is important, and being able to laugh, not take yourself too seriously or the situation too seriously. And little kids can bring so much joy in addition to the work. They can help bring that laughter, too. And I think remembering that friendship thing, and, you know, there's probably a reason, in addition to the, you know, the great backdrops in San Francisco or New York City, but in those rom-com movies, right, and the couple gets together and they have an all-day date, right, on a Saturday. They're running around town doing the fun things, and it makes for a great movie backdrop. But every once in a while, when you get that opportunity, maybe grandma and grandpa can take the kids for the day, or get a sitter, a good one that can watch them all day long and not get worn out, and take that time to remember why you got together in the first place. It's some tips I would share, but let's get some ideas from a professional about what gets poured into our engaged couples in the church through Fully Engaged, a great program of marriage prep. And we talk with Chris Codden, who's worked in that area for a really long time and is a great pro. Hey, Chris, so good to talk to you once again.
Well, it's good to hear your voice, Glenn. I saw you across the aisle at the ordination and didn't get a chance to talk to you. So really good to be with you again.
Yeah, we're talking about the ordination of Bishop Patrick Neary in St. Cloud, Minnesota, which happened just about a month ago or so. And great turnout for that. And great, you could make it back to the old stomping grounds. But you are able to continue even kind of retiring from the day-to-day office work with the great work of Fully Engaged. Get us up to speed a little bit on some of the latest in marriage prep that you do work with.
Well, Fully Engaged is growing. And one of the things that makes us a little bit different, it's an inventory that couples take, and so then they work with either their pastor, deacon, or a mentor couple, and they go through the inventory, which covers all kinds of different topics. Some very tough topics, like pornography, contraception, infertility, and adoption, but also some real concrete things that you were talking about in your intro about communication skills and conflict resolution and family of origin. So it's really a kind of a very comprehensive inventory, and yet it is catechetical because this is an opportunity for couples to really look at their faith very seriously as they enter into the sacrament of marriage. And that's what makes us a little bit more unique than some of the other programs that are out there.
Now, Chris, some of the challenges that to-be married couples face are eternal and have always been there. But are there some newer challenges in this day and age in a culture where actually getting married isn't as automatic at a younger age as it used to be?
Well, when I first started in marriage prep, which is almost 40 years ago, the average age of a couple getting married was 21. So if you think about, you know, at the age of 21, you know, you're maybe on your own. You may be still living at home. You may just be finishing college. But the influence of your family of origin and the impact of their faith journey has still a very significant role in your life. Well, now the average age is up to about 28, 29, almost 30. And if you think of that gap in those formative adult years, that a lot of people start to wane from their faith, don't take it as seriously, don't attend mass as often, those kind of things. And so the influence of the world has a lot of looking at their perspective. And so forming them for marriage, we really have to go back to the basics in many cases because there's been that gap. Not for all couples, but for a great many of them.
It used to be thought sometimes when kids would grow up and part of the, you know, story of life, they might fall away a little bit during college. But the assumption is, well, they'll come back to get married and then come back in a really big way when they're having kids and all of that. And sadly, no longer we can't make that assumption as automatically anymore.
We can't, you know, there's cohabitation. There's even, you know, if we look at the church, there's a lot of couples that get civilly married. And so without the sacrament, what we're seeing, particularly in about mid-30s up to into the mid-50s, there's a desire to bring back the faith, whether it's because their children are reaching, you know, first communion age, first reconciliation or confirmation, whether it's something's happened in the family or there's just there that burning desire to reconnect with their faith, that even if they were civilly married, we have another part of our fully engaged is for what we call convalidation or the validation of a civil marriage into the sacrament. And so we really take a look very seriously at what's the difference between those two and why the importance of entering into the sacrament and living a life of faith for both them as a couple, but also for their children.
Well, having God involved in the marriage, of course, always makes it stronger. And many a wedding homily has involved talking about that a little bit. And, you know, various denominations will have different things that kind of show that cord of three strands is stronger. And some, you know, visual, I can still recall one particular one, the first time I'd seen a depiction of that as part of the ceremony, as a matter of fact. But if that's been lacking, a little strength is lacking in terms of what can kind of keep the couple working toward getting better as a couple.
Most definitely. You know, those either bumps in the road where you just kind of look at each other and what was I thinking, you know, or if it's the big things that happen, whether it's a death of a parent or could be a death of a child or, you know, just some of those harder things that we have to deal with in life. There's not that faith aspect, those are really tough to get through and questioning about, you know, what am I doing here? So having that as a background, and that was very true for Rich and I. We lost a son when he was only 6 months old. We were only married 3 years. Mm-hmm. And it really smacked us in the face and said, what are we doing? Luckily, we were in a marriage encounter. And it was a tough weekend. You know, a lot of couples that make a marriage encounter come off just kind of flying high. For us, it was a tough weekend, but it really brought us back to why did we get married in the church? And what was our responsibility to each other, but also to the church about this sacrament that we asked for and we received? And what was our responsibility to give back? Not only to each other and to our kids, but also to the broader community and our own parish church.
Now, we hear, and maybe the first time if we hear it, we're a little surprised. We know it would be a stressor, but couples that lose a child, that is such a difficult thing for the marriage. And, you know, again, something worthy of being brought up as folks are heading into that. Any special insight? Again, we're sorry for that loss as long ago as it has been, but any insight for other couples who've had to go through that?
Well, when we went to the funeral home to arrange for Clayton's funeral, we were told by the mortician that 50% of couples that lose a child divorce. And we sat out in the car in the rain and we said, it's not going to be us. And we would do whatever it takes. So we did that. We made the marriage encounter only 3 months after he died. We got into a group in our parish that was, you know, not a support group on death, but a support group for marriage. In fact, that group, we were part of that group for 18 years after that. That was our, you know, that community in our parish that showed us that marriage is worth it. That marriage took work, very much so took work. But then also the people that loved us and surrounded us, that was one of the keys that helped us. So every time we would go to one of our, was the third Sunday of every month at our parish that we would go to one of our marriage encounter groups. Every time, I'm too tired. I don't want to go. You know, it's been a long day. The kids, you know, have this to do and this to do. But every time I went, I was so glad I did, because whatever the topic was, it just really hit Rich and I. And it gave us that opportunity to go deeper into our relationship.
A beautiful voice for strong marriages, leading a very common marriage prep program available in churches around the country. Fully engaged, Chris Cotton joining us on Morning Air this morning here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. We're at 888-914-9149. If you've got questions, comments, advice as we talk marriage prep today, 888-914-9149. As we were talking a little at the top of the segment, Sarah and I talking about really, Chris, being friends with your spouse and always having that there. That's important. Another thing too, you know, when a couple is engaged at that point in life, that's, you know, as good as it often they think can be, you know, you really like each other a lot at that point. You haven't run into the myriad of challenges that marriage can bring. But the other half of being friends and helping to stay friends is being able to forgive one another through the ups and downs.
Oh, it sure is. And, you know, with my semi-retirement, we decided to sell our house and we bought a fifth wheel trailer. It was 40 feet long and we bought a one-ton diesel truck. And we decided we wanted to see the country. Well, we start off on this journey, and neither one of us had ever had much experience, although Rich had drove truck before. But he didn't have much experience of backing something like that up. I'll tell you, the best communication conflict resolution you can do is back up a 40-foot trailer into an RV site. And there was, you know, and then if you've ever been in an RV park, as this is backing up, there's a crowd that comes because there's all the guys that want to see, okay, I want to see how you did this. Or the women are thinking, can you do this without a fight? So you're kind of in this fishbowl and we're watching it. And in one place that we were at, we had to back up in between two palm trees. This was in Florida. And it took Rich almost an hour to do that. He was not very happy with me at the end. And yet we really both kept our cool. But if we hadn't been both friends and knew each other and kind of our little idiosyncrasies in this whole arduous process, and if we didn't know how to forgive for some of our own failings, we would have been in a real mess. So I actually encourage couples that if you really are looking for conflict resolution exercise for yourself, probably try that.
Well, you know, nothing can mitigate the joy of a day fishing better than having difficulties backing up the trailer where it needs to be, and always backing things up with spectators is always interesting. And yeah, but it's important to, you know, point in the right direction when you need to turn the wheel this way, honey. No, not that much. And oh man, and I'm glad to hear. Did the palm trees survive that incident as well?
Yes, they did, and we actually were able to get our slides out within about 3 inches from where he had put it. So it was successful.
Oh, very good. Hey, just a quick tangent, because that's a great adventure. My goodness, you know, people talk about that upon retiring to travel and see the country, and you guys really did it. I mean, you invested to do that as a part of, you know, and you did some of the fully engaged stuff along the way, I know, from previous conversations. But what was the biggest and best takeaway of just doing that?
Well, I travel a lot for my job. At least I did pre-COVID. And doing that, you fly into a place, you know, you're usually picked up by someone, you get a rental car, you go to your hotel and you go to your venue, and then you do the reverse. This gave us the opportunity to look at the beauty of our country. I mean, for example, upstate New York, I had no idea of how, first of all, rural it was, but how beautiful it was. It gave us those opportunities, and then to be with people at the campsite that were, you know, on different kind of different journeys, but also, you know, about their love for our country, our love for the land and the creation that God has given us. So though it was a marvelous experience. We did park a few times in a parish parking lot, and maybe that wasn't the most ideal setting, but it also gave us a part of the community that we were now going to be talking to that next day or the day after, that opportunity to really get to know them and the history of their church and the history of their community. It was just such breathtaking advantage of taking time with people and not having to do this hurry from place to place.
Mm. Tell you what, we've got a call from your old stomping grounds there in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Let's go to the phones for Chris Cotton. Kathy is on the line. Good morning, Kathy. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Chris, I just have a question. If it, for your suggestion for marriage preparation, if they're not actively in the church, but something that would give them a firm foundation and maybe lead them back to that.
Oh, you know, very good question. I think it's an invitation, and not just by one person. I know as a mom, you know, my invitations go a little differently on their ears than someone else's. But to be able to, you know, invite them, not force them, because they're adults, we really can't do much. We can't take the car keys away anymore. But to be able to encourage them, and to kind of talk about their memories of church and mass and how important that was to them, even as they were growing up. Just trying to rekindle some of that, inviting them, you know, like for mass on like Easter Sunday even, and just, you know, so they get to home with the church. That's what I see so much with us, particularly with our older adults. You know, like an older adults, I'm talking like in, you know, almost 30 when we're talking marriage prep. But yet they've forgotten what they got as a youth, as a child, and those beautiful experiences. And don't they want that for themselves and then also for the family? So I think those invitations that we have can go a really long way and to help them understand, boy, there is something bigger than just going to a JP and saying a few words and then we're done.
Kathy, thanks for your question. Hopefully Chris's comments help there a little bit. I imagine, too, you know, as far as who that info comes from, Chris, when we're trying to get that that grandkid level generation going and trying to do it right in the church, they'll hear it a little differently maybe from grandparents than they will from mom and dad. And do you think, too, as well, like, you know, talking about the beauty and getting the married couple to think beyond themselves, all right? We're taught that, wow, this day is all about the bride and a little about the groom, but certainly all about them. Yeah. But to think beyond that, it can be a great extended family thing. It can be a great thing in the church, and it ought to be.
Well, and it should be. I mean, most weddings I've been at are many family reunions. You know, that the whole family comes together, but then there's also friends and opportunity. One of the things that I really liked that actually started with St. John Paul II was inviting not just our family and friends, but the whole church community so that they understood, you know, they could see firsthand that beginning, that excitement that there is in marriage. And, you know, after you've been married, we've been married 46 years, you know, that kind of wanes every once in a while. We have to rekindle that. And so going to a wedding is just kind of really exciting to see that fresh love, that beautiful passion that they have for one another. And I think Rich and I usually have a pretty good week or so after that, because it really does enkindle that in us. So that understanding of it, that it is broader. It is broader. And we're building up the body of Christ, whether it's in our parish, whether it's in our community, whether it's in our homes, in the domestic church. But we're really building up the body of Christ every time a couple enters into that sacrament.
Oh, well, sadly, out of time. Sorry, the call's coming in hot and heavy at the last minute here, but just out of time. Chris, beautiful to check in with you once again. Keep up that great enthusiasm for bringing folks together and living a proper and happy and joyful married life through Fully Engaged, some great marriage prep. And if folks would like to find out more about that, whether their church is involved with that or not, where can they go for Fully Engaged?
Our website is GetFullyEngaged.com. So all one, GetFullyEngaged.com. That will get you to our website. Has a lot of information. And on there are a lot of tips for marriage under the facilitators button. So those are all password free. So you can kind of browse there as well.
Well, hey, great to talk with you once again. Say hi to Rich and encourage him to let him know that we'd love to have him give you some trailer backing up lessons and see how you do at that as well.
No thanks. We sold the trailer.
Oh, he got out of that one. Very good.
Yeah.
There goes Chris Cotton with Fully Engaged. We continue with Morning Air Story Corner coming up before the hour is through. We'll talk some interesting dispensations for St. Patrick's Day. What goes into that? What are some options, perhaps, for mealtime tomorrow in different parts of the country? Father James Kubicki joins us next as we continue with more of Morning Air here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. Doing a little jig this morning here on Morning Air. It's Glenn and Sarah in for John. We're going to talk dispensations for Friday. It's St. Patrick's Day. That's right. It's a Friday foods during Lent. I imagine, Sarah, you've probably had a peanut butter sandwich on a Friday in Lent before.
Yes, I have. That is one of the go-tos, right? Unless you have a food allergy, then stay clear from that peanut butter, will ya?
All right. How about cheese pizza? Perhaps you've had some of that on a Friday in Lent?
Yes, yes. All we're getting here. Right. Glenn, I think you've been hitting up all my Friday dinners here.
Perhaps some meatless spaghetti on a Friday during Lent.
That is always an option. Usually buttered noodles. Sometimes we're not in the mood for the red sauce, but yes.
All right. Very good. Very good. How about muskrat? You ever had muskrat on Friday during Lent?
Don't think I've had muskrat. You know, I've had octopus, but I've never had muskrat. No.
No, I'm not a big fan of calamari myself either. If you like meat bubblegum, if that's your game, go for it. But
that's what it tastes
how about
like.
How about alligator? Ever had that on a Friday during Lent?
I have never had that. You know what? I've been trying to look for that at the grocery store, but they've just been out every time. I'm not sure why.
Oh, they're all buying it up in preparation for the Minnesota State Fair, where you can get alligator on a stick. But we mentioned alligator and muskrat, as they have been a couple of the things we think of not as fish, but they live in the water. So they've been approved at one time or another as something you can eat on Friday. But for tomorrow, in many dioceses around the U.S., majority of them, as a matter of fact, you do have the option to have some corned beef and all of the good things that go with the St. Patrick's Day tradition. We're going to talk a little bit about dispensations and the like and where we're good to go or not and how all that came about and what we do about meat on Fridays or not all year long with Father James Kubicki, regular guest here, spiritual director at St. Francis de Sales Seminary in Milwaukee, retreat director. Great to have you along, Father.
Well, thank you, Glenn and Sarah. Good to be with you this day before the Feast of St. Patrick. So I'm glad we can talk about this because I'm sure some of our listeners are a little confused, you know, where in one diocese, the Lenten abstinence rule is still in effect. But in other dioceses, bishops have lifted that and given a dispensation to eat meat or to eat corned beef and cabbage. So we're going to try to unpack that a little bit in this next 20 minutes or so.
Well, I imagine we ought to start with the most important question, is that have you ever had alligator, whether it be on a Friday in Lent or any other time for that matter?
I did. I tried it once. I was down in the New Orleans area giving a parish mission. We're actually in another week or so, I'm going to be back there, St. Anne's Shrine in Metairie, Louisiana. And I'm going to be down there. But once when I was down there, I saw it on the menu as an appetizer. And I said, you know, I've got to try this. And so I did. And, you know, it's like so many other things that people say, it tasted just like chicken.
Yes, that seems to be the common thing. But Louisiana, that area, one of the places where it was determined that alligators, since they spent so much time in the water, would qualify as something that could be eaten on a Friday. I've had lots of conversations the last couple of weeks about this with various priests and canon lawyers even. And, you know, ultimately coming down, Father, to the fact that, you know, what's in our heart for Lent? Are we just looking for loopholes or, you know, are we finding ourselves in a place where we've been invited somewhere and that's on the menu and we want to be gracious to our hosts and all of that. And at the same point, learning that the diocese you live in, all right, if it's decided you can eat meat on St. Patrick's Day, that works whether you're in your home diocese or if you're traveling, or if you're traveling to another diocese and in that diocese it is permitted, then you're permitted while you're there as well. For folks really looking for the loopholes, but I imagine in all of this, Father, just keeping in mind why we're doing this in the first place.
That's right. You know, I'm so glad you mentioned it, Glenn, because, you know, what we're thinking about here is what is the spirit, not the letter of the law. And so the spirit of the law is that during this time of Lent, it's a penitential season, and we should be doing some penance. And in many cases, we think of, you know, what's the minimum requirement. But I always like to tell people, you know, the reason for penance is to imitate Jesus, who spent 40 days in the desert fasting. And we do it out of love. And so love, you know, doesn't ask questions like, what's the minimum requirement? What do I, you know, what's the least I have to do to show you my love? You know, love asks, what more can I do? And so I think, you know, keeping that in mind in the spirit of this penitential season, that we're doing this not simply because we're rule-based Christians, but because it's an act of love. And I think what's important is that in all the dioceses, whether it's, for example, my home diocese here of Milwaukee, the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, where Archbishop Listecki has given a dispensation for tomorrow's feast day, that people will be able to eat corned beef and cabbage. And but in doing so, he also said some other penance or charitable act should be done on another day or today. For example, a charitable act, reaching out to the poor, giving a donation today, or to give up meat on some other day. And in the Archdiocese of Chicago, Cardinal Supich has not lifted the abstinence rule, so he's keeping that in place. But I think he has a very pastoral view of this. He says you may end up on this day at a special dinner somewhere, and rather than making a scene, if you are served corned beef, to eat it in good conscience, but again, to do another type of penance, as it were, to make up for the fact that you're not abstaining from meat today. So every diocese has a little different approach to it. And I love the creativity of Bishop Fernandez in Columbus, Ohio, who said, instead of eating meat today, what you can do is to choose something else. For example, to make a pilgrimage or to visit a church that is dedicated to St. Patrick somewhere in the Diocese of Columbus, or to go to Mass today, tomorrow on the Feast of St. Patrick, or to pray the breastplate prayer of St. Patrick, or to pray the Stations of the Cross, the Rosary, or to spend some time in Eucharistic adoration. Or he said to do some other comparable kind of penance, for example, abstaining from meat during another day in this third week of Lent. So every diocese is a little different, and I think if our listeners are confused and wondering what is the rule in their diocese, you can always go online and check out your diocesan website, where I'm sure that information will be posted.
We've got questions today about dispensations or kind of good practices throughout the course of the year. We'd love to hear from you. Father Kubicki always enjoys talking with you at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. As we move on, Father, here we think of, you know, it's actually something we ought to be doing, some kind of penance on a Friday all year long. And, you know, it's not automatically no meat anymore, but do we kind of forget that we ought to be doing something?
That's a very good point, Glenn, because, you know, when I grew up where every Friday was a meatless day. And so when the bishops in the United States lifted that rule of abstinence on every Friday, they kept it in place for the Fridays during this penitential season of Lent. But when they lifted that rule, they also said the faithful are encouraged to perform some other act of penance. And what they had in mind especially was not just doing penance for the sake of doing penance, but with a kind of positive focus in their penitential act. So when they lifted the rule about abstaining from meat on Friday, they also said to do some other act of penance specifically for peace, praying for peace in the world. And how we need that more so than ever today, don't we? You know, that we need peace. And one of the ways that we pray for peace is to pray with our bodies and to perform acts of abstaining from meat or dessert or fasting in one way or another. You know, Glenn, one of the other questions I have for our listeners, because I have to admit, I'm a little confused. I'm not a canonist. You know, I'm not familiar with canon law, but I read just yesterday that there is a canon in the Code of Canon Law, Canon 1251, that says when the Feast of St. Patrick is celebrated in a diocese where the patron saint of the diocese is St. Patrick, it's celebrated as a solemnity. And a solemnity during Lent is much like a Sunday, where we are exempt from or dispensed from performing acts of penance. And so, you know, the Archdiocese of New York, the Archdiocese of Boston, of Los Angeles, their patron saint is St. Patrick. And so I'm wondering if, because their patron saint is St. Patrick and the feast is celebrated as a solemnity, if they are automatically dispensed from that, abstaining from meat on tomorrow's feast day. So I'd love to hear from any of our listeners, especially from New York or Boston or Los Angeles, who might be able to answer that question for me, because I had not heard that before I read it yesterday.
Well, and too, Father, we might be getting a big break here in the middle of Lent, Litare Sunday coming up. It's a Sunday in Lent, St. Patrick's Day, and to the degree that is lifted up on Friday, St. Joseph's Solemnity on Monday. So, you know, we could get a little break, much needed. And speaking of breaks, how about that for a segue? Got to take one now. But back with more with Father Kubicki and your calls as well at 888-914-9149. Next Story Corner coming up in a little bit, too. It's all on the way here at Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. With more of Morning Air, it's Glenn and Sarah in for John today. Our number is 888-914-9149 if you'd like to chime in with Father James Kibicki joining us today, talking about dispensations for being able to eat some meat there on Friday, St. Paddy's Day tomorrow, and just in general, abstinence on Fridays, or what should we do throughout the course of the year? Some interesting ways to kind of dig into canon law a little bit when we look at, well, what does it mean if St. Patrick's Day is in a diocese where St. Patrick, you know, is the patron of that diocese, and then, you know, coming up, the Solemnity of St. Joseph moved to Monday. We have some excuses to celebrate a little to get us through the middle of Lent here, Father.
That's right. And, you know, again, I love the way you put it earlier, Glenn, that, you know, it's not just a question of following rules, but the spirit with which we follow them. So that's why I think it's so important for all of our listeners that if you are in a diocese where the bishop has lifted the dispensation for eating meat on Friday tomorrow, because it's the Feast of St. Patrick, that it's that you should substitute something else. That you should do this in the spirit of, I want to continue the penitential sense of this season. So instead, I'm going to do maybe something positive, like substituting a special prayer, like Bishop Fernandez has suggested in Columbus, to pray the Stations of the Cross. Or in Cleveland, the bishop there has said to choose another day for fasting, or to give an offering tomorrow on behalf of the poor. Because, you know, the whole tradition of corned beef on the Feast of St. Patrick goes back. It's not an Irish tradition as such, as in people living in Ireland, but it was the Irish Americans who had to leave Ireland because of the potato famine from 1845 to 1852. And when they came to the United States, they were able to celebrate the bounty and the freedom that they had in this new land. And so corned beef became part of the diet here on St. Patrick's Day, a way of celebrating their freedom. So continuing that sense, we in different dioceses celebrate with corned beef and cabbage on the Feast of St. Patrick. But, you know, Glenn, I have to be honest here. And if I had a choice, what would be more penitential, eating fish or eating corned beef? I'm not a big fan of corned beef. And so I think for me, it's easier to abstain from corned beef than it is to abstain from substituting fish. I think I'd rather have a good shrimp scampi or a good baked cod or fish fry tomorrow and celebrate the Feast of St. Patrick that way rather than having corned beef. I'm not a big fan of corned beef.
Well, I'm with you, Father. I'm a bit Irish, but I'd still rather go for the salmon or walleye on a Friday any day of the year, as a matter of fact. I love fish, so it's not that much of a penance here. But talking about the reasons for doing that, and again, reminding folks, you know, we have a lot of rules in our faith and a fair amount of loopholes to those rules, too. But it's not about that. It's about in the heart, right? Why are we doing that? How are we trying to love our Lord? How are we trying to build up our faith? How are we trying to be able to, you know, distance ourselves from just following every little physical whim that our bodies might send to us, to have some mastery over all of that? And that's the intent of giving up things, including meat on Fridays during Lent.
That's right. And that's where I think it's marvelous that so many archbishops, bishops have said, you know, in place of this giving something up, why not add something tomorrow in celebration of St. Patrick? And again, Bishop Rhodes in Fort Wayne, South Bend, Indiana, said go to Mass or pray a rosary for world peace or spend a half hour of prayer in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And Glenn, you know, I'd like to put in a little plug here. In a month, I'm going to be giving a retreat at Bellarmine Retreat House, the Jesuit Retreat House outside Chicago in Barrington, Illinois. And it's a 3-day retreat starting April 14th to the 16th. And it's the weekend of Divine Mercy. So it's going to be a very special retreat for the people that gather there. And it's going to be for men or women. So if that might be a good way, it's not during the penitential season of Lent, but it is a great way to celebrate the weekend of Divine Mercy. So that's Bellarmine Retreat House in Barrington, Illinois. If folks in that area want to travel out there and make a retreat with me, I'll be happy to meet you there.
Well, Father, as much as we enjoy your daily reflections and your regular visits here on Morning Air, I can only imagine the joy folks will get in getting to spend an entire retreat here, learning wisdom from you as well. So that is bound to be good as you join us for some wisdom on the air today about well more than meat or not on St. Patrick's or any Friday. But here we are, kind of, you know, roughly the midpoint of Lent. What can you do to kind of help us to continue to persevere? For some, it's been a very Lenty Lent in the northern portions of the country, as well as a lot of California. A ton of snow and kind of natural hardship we're dealing with out there, as well as what we might have placed on our own Lenten practices.
Well, that's a good question, Glenn, because so often the penances that we encounter are not things that we choose, but things that are more or less are placed upon us, crosses that we encounter in our lives. I just finished giving a parish mission. I want to give a shout out to the three parish community up in Tigerton, Wittenberg, and Marion, Wisconsin, where I finished a parish mission last night. And I ended on the note that the way we can live the Eucharist, live the offering that we make of ourselves every time we gather for the celebration of the Mass, the way we live that out in our daily lives is by making a morning offering ourselves to the Lord. And that morning offering traditionally included things like our prayers, works, joys, and sufferings, which is one of the more difficult things to offer to the Lord, because when suffering comes our way, we tend to either fall into self-pity and whine, or we become angry at God and we ask, why me? You know, why not other people? I've been good. Why am I afflicted with this suffering? And that's a moment for us to step back and say, okay, this is not a penance that I'm choosing, but it's one that the Lord is putting on my shoulders. It's like the cross that the soldiers gave Jesus, but then Simon of Cyrene was forced to help Jesus carry that cross. And that's really the spirit of penance, Glenn. It's where Jesus came to repair the damage of sin, and he did that through his own suffering. The fasting that he did in the desert, the hard work of traipsing all around Galilee and Judea and being tired from meeting so many crowds of people and teaching and preaching and healing, and then suffering on the cross and dying for us. All of that was to repair the damage of sin. And that's the spirit with which we enter into Lent and with which we perform these penances. It's to, in our own little way, take on a cross that is joined to the cross of Jesus, with the idea that since sin continues in our world, we want to continue to repair the damage that sin does through our prayer and acts of penance.
Father, a call here about not as much eating, but selling meat as part of a fundraiser. Sam in Los Angeles joining us today on the phone. Sam, go right ahead with your question for Father Kubicki.
Yes, in the parish that I attend, they do the St. Joseph's Table, which is the 17th, 18th, and 19th. They give you free spaghetti, and then you purchase your sausage and meatballs. And it's a fundraiser for the food pantry. So now that I'm hearing the show and thinking, when the 18th lands on a Friday, is that something that the bishop would dispense to allow for meat? Because I honestly can't remember if, when it's landed on a Friday, if we were told, go ahead and purchase your sausages and meatballs.
And Sam, a clarification, and the idea is you purchase those not to take home and eat later, but that you have a big banquet where people are eating right there. Is that the way it works?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Wow, that's a great question. And our Archbishop Gomez, I'm not sure what he thinks about that or has said about that. But I think, again, in the spirit of Lent, because it's a fundraiser for a food pantry, I would say that a work of charity is bigger than a work of penance or abstaining from meat. So I would say, because it's a fundraiser to, as Cardinal Supich said in Chicago, eat in good conscience, but do another form of penance another time. Now, if I hope I'm not disagreeing or opposing something that Archbishop Gomez has said, but that's kind of the way I would approach it, is to do this act of charity, mindful of offering it as an act of penance. Thanks for the call, Sam.
Thank you, Sam. Hope that clarifies things just a little bit. And thanks for helping us wind our way through all the twists and turns of meat or not on St. Patrick's Day. Always a joy, Father Kubicki, to have you along. Blessings as Lent continues for you and the rest of us. And Morning Air continues right now on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app with today's Story Corner. Our story today called Not Home Yet, by Joseph Mazzella. I love the story of the old missionary couple. Now, this couple went to Africa to serve as missionaries right after they were married. They'd planned to serve only a couple years and then return home. They soon fell in love, however, with the kind people that they had come to help. They stayed on year after year, setting up a clinic and a school, helping the people to build a sanitation system so they could have clean water, teaching children to read and learn, and sharing their faith and love daily with the villagers that they cared so deeply about. Finally, after some 50 years of faithful work, failing health caused the couple to decide to come home again. They wrote to their hometown community and church to let them know when they were coming. So after sailing for several days, they arrived in the port community they grew up in. They smiled when they saw a large crowd cheering the boat as it anchored. Their smiles and hearts fell, though, when they saw the crowd was there to cheer a local politician on the same trip. The old man told his crying wife that he was going to ask God in prayer why, after so many years of service, not one person was there to greet them when they arrived home. He went into their cabin several minutes and then came out with a peaceful and joyous smile on his face. His wife asked him if God had said anything to him as he prayed. Yes, he replied. He said, "You're not home yet." This is something we all should remember as we journey through life with all its challenges, pains, and struggles. We're not home yet. Home is the place where our loving Father awaits us. Home is the place where our true reward lies. Home's the place where the love that we learned, the good we did, the joy we shared will reside in our souls forever. Rejoice in your life here then. Love, help others, and be happy. The lights will be on when you finally get home. John 14:2, the words of our Lord, "In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I am going there to prepare a place for you." That's our Story Corner story today. Thanks for listening to the story every chance you get. You can also listen again or share it with others. A podcast version of our Story Corner available on the Relevant Radio app, along with all that other good stuff available, too, on the Relevant Radio website at relevantradio.com. Just look for the Glenn Story Corner section there and for you to download and share. We also love to hear from you, your suggestions for stories, things you've run across you think others may enjoy. Maybe it's something you've written yourself. We would love to hear from you as well. Always happy to do that. St. Patty's Day coming up tomorrow. We've got a really big shoe lined up for you. We'll have some fun Irish music, and we'll be talking all manner of St. Patty's things. That'll be on the way tomorrow. If you like the song by the Ides of March vehicle, you heard that just a little bit on the Patrick Madrid show yesterday, in and out of some of the breaks. Odds are you may not, as they may be resting that today, but rest assured there'll be some great music to go along with all that good advice. Now, there's a man you can ask about the rules of meat and every other rule in the church. Patrick Madrid and Cyrus coming up next. Thanks to producers Gabby and Sarah today. There's more on the way here at Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.